This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over the Santa Stakeout. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to spoil it for you, then you might want to pass on this one and we will see you next time.
Are you ready for
one dry kiss? Fa la 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 la.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where we recap in November and December a singular, sparkling, Christmassy movie and episode. Today we are covering The Santa Stakeout. And I would like to introduce my Christmas caroling cohort, Tamara Cosio.
And I would like to introduce my co-host, my mysterious, my soon-to-be SoCal-bound bestie, Corinne Eddy.
Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
Godwink, Godwink, Godwink.
I am so excited to be going down and seeing you. I was going to be like, I'm going to be Thelma and Louise-ing it down there. And I was like, no, I'm not. Do not worry. I'm not going to be driving into any canyons. It's all good.
I was going to say, then you won't make it if you go down a canyon unless it's, Topanga Canyon or Coldwater Canyon. And those are streets. Those aren't deep crevasses where your car can disappear into fiery flames.
Nah, I'm going to be like trucking out of work as soon as it ends and see you, San Francisco Bay Area. Hello, Los Angeles.
Hello, sunshine. All the sunshine, all the warmth you can take.
Yay.
It'll be glorious. Before I do my synopsis, I have a fun throwback story about me and you, because this is the Santa Stakeout, and it concerns two detectives. When we were living on the same street, growing up, elementary schoolish level, I loved Scooby-Doo and wanted to be a detective.
Yes.
Like for a few years. And I was like trying to get you on board to be like get on the detective train with me. And you weren't as interested as I was.
No. I was interested in being a crime fighter of the superhero variety, but not the Scooby-Doo variety.
No, not the Scooby-Doo. I was very much Scooby-Doo. And in one of my school textbooks that I for some reason got to keep, there was a mystery story a la Nancy Drew.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, this is my shot to reel Corinne in. I'm going to get her interested and she's going to want to be a detective with me. And we're going to go Encyclopedia Brown the fuck out of the neighborhood. And so I wrote down like in one part of the story that was like really suspenseful. Tamara and Corinne need to solve this.
Oh.
And I at one point like went to you and I was like, Corinne, look, I was reading this book and this message magically appeared. I don't know where it came from. And I showed it to you and you were like, yeah, uh-huh. And then you went on your merry way and just was like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, what? It seems like she knew that was me, that I wrote that in the book. How could she tell? Years later, come across the book again, open it. I had extreme dyslexia. And when I looked at that writing, you could tell it was me because every other letter was fucking backwards.
Oh.
And it was obvious that I wrote it because of that.
You're like one of those kids who forges their parents' name and it's like,
oh, yeah,
dad instead of.
Yeah.
I feel so bad that I never acknowledged your Scooby dreams. I was always more action adventure.
There's still time. There is still time. And we're going to get into the...
I'm here for it now.
We're Santa staking it out. I mean, that's something.
Yeah. Before we launch into that, Tamara, you just did a beautiful design job on our brand spanking new, as promised over Christmas in July, bingo cards.
Oh, yes. And if you don't already have that bingo card in front of you, you can print it out on our website, onedrykiss.com, because I believe that this movie may have a bingo.
And one of the squares was inspired by the podcast One Kiss Means Forever. They do a coat count of the number of coats that people wear. And this movie definitely counted for the coat count because Tamara was wearing all kinds of coats. There's a lot of Christmas movie bingo cards, but I would say ours is very Hallmark specific.
Oh, yes, it is. Which makes it funner,
yes.
I think.
Yeah. Now, do you have a synopsis for us?
I do have a synopsis.
Oh, fantastic.
I will not be reading it in that funky accent. Two detectives, Tanya Morris, played by Tamara Maury Housley.
Yes!
And Ryan Anderson, played by Paul Campbell. Paul Campbell in this movie is truly in his finest surly form. And Tamara plays a sassy cop also extremely well. So just kudos to them. Mm-hmm. These two detectives are tasked to solve an art heist where the thief is breaking into various museums after hours and coincidentally, shortly after each location's holiday party. They have a suspect, an unassuming gentleman named Francis Miller, who is the hired Santa at all the events. He loves the holidays, but also has a rap sheet of previous crimes, including, you guessed it, grand theft. The detectives go on a stakeout right next to Francis's house, but in their effort to gather evidence, get caught up in his Christmas council and the neighborhood's spirited festivities.
Aww.
They are accepted as new members of the community, which causes a conflict of interest because as Tanya and Ryan get deeper into the case, they start caring for the small community that embraced them. Will Detective Morris and Anderson solve the case of the stealing Santa? Will they be forced to be the Grinches who stole Francis Miller's Christmas? Find out with us as we grab our binoculars and hunker down for this Santa stakeout.
Nice!
Corinne, do you, and you told me some of the escapades you've had trying to find fun facts, do you have some fun facts?
I actually do. The one interview that I listened to, which shall not be named, was totally useless. However, then I remembered that I had saved something on Twitter just for this occasion. There is a lovely Hallmark little marketing sort of thing that Tamara and Paul did together where they were like each on their own Zoom and they were answering different questions. And so from that, I was like, oh, this is very lovely. Yes, you like each other, but give me something to work with. And then Tam did not mention that what's-his-name Miller is played by Joe Pantaleone, which is fine. I'm not throwing shade on you, but he is of Goonies and Sopranos fame. He's been in lots of different things. He's like an Emmy Award-winning actor. He's really good. And so, fun facts, they have a funny story from shooting. They were doing night shoots in a cul-de-sac from like starting at 4 p.m. ending at 4 a.m. It's 3:30 in the morning. Joe Pantaleano, sorry, Joe, didn't mean to completely slaughter your last name. He's tired. In the movie, the neighborhood Christmas committee is out caroling. So there's a group of about 4 to 6 adults that aren't Paul and Tamara waiting to shoot. So the Christmas committee, they're killing time while they wait, doing an a cappella rendition of Staying Alive. There's harmony, the whole nine yards. And at a certain point, Joe has had enough. And so he looks over at them and they're like, Staying Alive, Staying Alive. And Tam's now like, oh, 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 in her head. I can see you dancing.
You know it.
Mm-hmm. And so he looks over at them and he just raises his hand and then he closes it in a silent gesture and he goes, shh. They go from Staying Alive to Staying Alive because he just like powerfully shut them down. He's a powerful man.
Wow.
Final fun fact, our bestie, Paul. We chat with him all the time. He responded to a tweet we did saying that we were excited for the movie. He said, and it's a good one because we're close like that.
He's like, oh, it's my coochie cooler comrades. How's it going, girls?
It is a little awkward that he calls us the coochie cooler twins, but you know, it's fine.
We're just going to now from here on out say, coochie cooler powers activate.
Frosty vajay.
Form of a queef. Shape of a pubic hair.
Ew. Ow.
See, that's why it's a perfect superpower. Who's going to come after you in the shape of a pubic hair? It's a powerful muff you have, ma'am.
Yes, I know. I know. So, are you ready to launch in to the tale that is the Santa Stakeout?
Dun, dun, dun. I am.
Woohoo!
Na 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 na. Nothing says the holidays like Grand Theft. We get a festive holiday montage at the opening of our movie. There's a family taking their holiday photo. Then we cut to somebody breaking into a museum. A little boy is driving his toy sports car across the rug, and someone is stealing a real sports car from a garage. You get the picture. There is some festive felonies going on.
Ooh.
After that fun little snippet of images, we are introduced to Detective Tanya Morris. She exits her quaint house on a snowy afternoon to meet her sister, Amy, for coffee. And probably cocoa, because this is a Hallmark Christmas movie after all. Mm-hmm. They meet, walk, and talk about the holidays, and Amy has bad news. Her fiancé, place name here because I can never find it and didn't bother to try to go back.
I think it was just fiancé.
Amy's husband. Yeah. I'm just going to call him Amy's husband because so many years, so many women have been like so-and-so's wife. So this guy's just Amy's husband.
Yes.
In the ODK universe. Amy's husband wants her to meet his parents in Denver. And Amy really wants to go, but she's conflicted. I know you just moved to town and I don't want you to spend the holidays on your own. So why don't you come with us? She says this to her sister, Tanya Tamara Morris, who politely declines. She doesn't want to oppose. And this Tamara, podcaster Cosio, thinks that sounds like a fresh slice of hell. And I would not go with her either because, yes, please let me be the third wheel to your in-law's house who you're meeting for the first time that incidentally lives so far away that you can't leave if the shit gets real. Nuh-uh. A good sister would go first, do some recon on the parents, and then extend the invite. Besides that, Tanya's a smart cookie and knows it's a pity invite when she hears one and assures her sister that she'll be fine. She's got plenty of work to keep her busy.
Aww.
That work is at the police precinct where she goes and sits at her desk, which is pushed up against Detective Anderson. They greet each other coolly, their words dripping with contempt. He hangs up the phone as she sits down and asks, "Does your desk really need to look like Christmas puked all over it?" She cocks her head to the side and gives him a "I ain't taking no shit" squint and says that he is free to keep his desk like Scrooge, but she likes Christmas and will decorate her desk any way she sees fit. Anderson asks, "And where did you work at before again in Wisconsin as the chief hall monitor?" She smirks, "I was a beat cop, but now I'm a detective." A rookie detective, he adds. Yes, she agrees curtly, and you keep reminding me of that. She goes on her computer to start her day and then starts humming some Christmas tunes. And Anderson's delicate, grinchy ears can't seem to handle it. Can you please not? He says. And she sighs and admits, I just need some Christmas spirit right now. My sister's going out of town for the holidays. Are you doing anything special for Christmas? Anderson says he's doing what any brosif would do, hanging with his boys, watching football with his feet up.
Yeah.
That depresses Detective Morris even more, and she hits up her advent calendar to grab some chocolate cheer. But alas, she opens a drawer, and it's empty. And the next, they are all empty. Who ate my advent calendar chocolate? She yells. Yeah, Anderson chimes in, standing with mock concern. Who took the rookie's detective's chocolate? But there on his desk is the evidence. She picks up the wrapper and holds him up to him. It's not what it looks like, he explains as he plops back in his chair. I ate them. He doesn't give a shit and he admits it full out. She folds her arms and he gushes an absurd apology. I'm so sorry. I was hungry and wanted fast food, but that wasn't food, but it was fast. He punctuates his explanation with jazz hands. And she's still unmoved. So he pushes a stale old pizza box at her. Here. A peace offering. She scowls at him and tosses her candy wrappers into the box with a curt no thanks. Shortly after that, the police chief calls them both into his office. He pulls out a map and goes over three art heists that happened all within days of each other. A Dali, a Rodin, and a Degas all got stolen from three different locations. And I was so proud that I knew all of those artists because I was an art major. Thanks, college. The chief relays that he needs this cleaned off his books before he retires in the next couple of weeks. And all the thefts happened after hours with very high-tech equipment and following each location's holiday parties. He hands Detective Morris a stack of surveillance photos and she flips through them and notices that the very same Santa was at all three parties. Curious. She points this out to the chief and he is impressed. Very observant, he comments while relooking at the photos. Anderson, not wanting to be outdone, clickety-clocks on his phones and says, Ha! I got a name! His name is Francis Miller, a.k.a. Mr. Christmas. The chief, impressed again, commends him on his fast work. And he shrugs smugly. I have a friend who works at the museum, and he looked him up in the logbook. Will, I have his picture, Morris says as she flips around a laptop to show a guy scowling in a mugshot. And she adds, here's his record. Grand theft. She smirks in Anderson's direction, and the chief decides, well, that's settled. Since you both work so well together, you're both on the case. Anderson and Morris give each other the side eye and get sour who just farted looks on their face, but they don't argue because they both want the case, even if it's with each other.
I gotta say, we all know that Paul Campbell gives good eyebrow. And
yes,
you know who his match is? Tamara. She does excellent eyebrow as well. And I'm like, you two, you're a good match for each other. Tanya and Ryan decide to check out Miller's house. Much to Tanya's chagrin, they took Ryan's car, which is filthy and filled with old fast food trash. You don't know me. My car is immaculate inside. Or maybe I envision me as Ryan in this movie and Tamara as Tanya. And sadly, there are a bit too many similarities between Detective Ryan Anderson and me. And I swear to you, the last time Tamara rode in my car, we had a very similar scene to where Tanya holds up a fast food box and says, is this a McRib? They haven't sold these since last year.
I feel this scene so hard.
However, thankfully, Tamara is more tolerant of my mess. But back to the show. Ryan explains away the McRib by saying that he's sentimental and then swiftly changes topics.
Okay, there's Miller's house and, the house next door is for rent.
Tanya checks out Miller's place and her Christmas loving heart is wowed. His yard is amazing. Look at how much Christmas is going on there. Garlands, the lights, the candy canes. I bet Santa visits his house first. Just then, a locksmith van pulls up to Miller's house. Miller comes out and the locksmith guy gets out of the van, handing Miller a red metal toolbox. Ryan narrows his eyes. Ooh, this guy is up to no good. But Tanya questions him. How can you be so sure? Right now, we should be observing, not drawing conclusions. Ryan responds, I always think it's best to assume the worst, and then, if things work out, be pleasantly surprised. Remember, this guy was convicted 15 years ago of grand theft. The van drives off, and they wonder why Miller needs locksmith tools.
Highly suspicious. Dun, 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 dun.
Suspicious. After they're done with their initial recon work, they meet with the chief, but not at the station, at a holiday fair. The chief's wife is going all out for their last Christmas in Colorado, so he has some shopping to do. As they walk by giant gingerbread sculptures, festive booths, and, of course, twinkle lights, Ryan is pitching searching Miller's house. Chief, he's got all sorts of sketchy things going on. Strange deliveries, suspicious characters. I feel it in my gut. If we could get into his house, I just know we'd find what we need. Tanya dryly responds, too bad your gut can't get us a search warrant. The chief, who is browsing a booth filled with stuffed snowmen, says, Tanya's right. We don't have enough for a warrant. Tanya says, let's do some more surveillance. We can document more cause that way and get the warrant we need. Ryan one-ups her. I could do a stakeout. The house next door to Miller is up for rent, and it would be the perfect location. The chief pauses on his shopping mission. A stakeout? Yes. I'll authorize that for the next 7 days until Christmas. And Tanya is relieved. Great. Well, Ryan, I hope your stakeout goes well. The chief says, not so fast. The both of you are going to do the stakeout together. You're going to be partners on this investigation. On this investigation. Tanya, you show great promise and you've been wanting a high-profile case. Tanya says, but... And Ryan agrees. Tanya and I finally agree on something. I really don't think we should be working together. The chief raises his eyebrows. Well, it's a good thing I'm calling the shots here because I think the two of you will balance each other out quite nicely. Tanya, you can learn from Ryan's experience, and Ryan, she can help keep you in line. I know you tend to play a little fast and loose. They both sigh and look at each other. The chief continues, now the both of you, go out and solve this case. It needs to be done before I retire, and once I retire, I'll be on a beach somewhere with a fruity drink with a tiny umbrella. Don't get in the way of my tiny umbrella drink. They both assure him that they will solve that case.
He says he's going to drink a banana daiquiri. Gross. I was like, that sounds disgusting. A banana daiquiri. Don't keep me from my banana daiquiri. No, please keep me from my your banana daiquiri. Wouldn't it get brown super fast?
I bet it's made with like banana syrup, which would be even grosser. So it'd be bright yellow. Ooh, it looked like pee.
Or banana flavoring.
Yay.
Ooh, oh, pea daiquiri.
Hey.
Is that on our bingo board? Pea daiquiri. Corner square.
I think that's a little too specific.
Yeah. We need to make an ODK specific bingo card with all the wonderful musings that we ponder with each other.
Nobody will ever win, but you might be able to check off one box a movie. Ryan and Tanya are at the stakeout house next door to Miller. They have sussed out all the good locations for spying. Ryan glances over at Tanya's suitcases that are on the table. He says grumpily, let me guess, first stakeout? And Paul jokingly referred to the fact that he probably only took a pair of underwear for a week's stakeout. Like his character was just like, yeah, I packed a pair of underwear. We're good.
I didn't even bring a suitcase. It's here in my pocket.
It's for the guy or girl on the go, you know?
That is something that women, I don't think any girl that I've spoken to ever travels like that. Like, girls travel with twice as much underwear than what they need just for, you know.
Oops, for period's sake, so.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but since you did, yes, just in case.
You never know. And all the layers. I got to have my layers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guarantee you that when I go down to visit you, I am bringing my, like, long john jammies, and I'm bringing my short john jammies so that I can be either, like, really cool or really warm if I need to. Just in case. Mix and match. Make it work. Tanya looks surprised at his comment of first stakeout, and she says, yeah, how'd you know? Ryan rolls his eyes. Santa's sleigh doesn't have as much stuff as you brought with you. Tanya chuckles. I come prepared. She flips open the largest suitcase, which is filled with Christmas decor. Oh, yes, she's going to decorate the shit out of the house. It is Christmas, after all.
I don't get it. I pack underwear and sweaters and far too many outfits. I don't think I would, no matter how I don't know, maybe if I was festive, I'd understand that. But packing decorations for a rental house that you're going to be at for 7 days.
I have a point, though. Packing decorations for a guy that you specifically know it irks him to have them around at the house for 7 days. And he's a little pain in your hiney.
Makes more sense.
I'd be like, yeah. Oh, look at this. Look, I just happen to have a suitcase full of Christmas shit. Even though I don't care about Christmas decorating for the most part. If he was a pain in my hiney, I would pack that suitcase. No, I'm not passive aggressive. Nice. It's fine. I've done the work.
I can see it now. You're going to, like, schlep all kinds of Christmas decorations up here with you. Or the next time you come, it's March, Corinne. But I know it bothers you.
You're like, what are you doing? And I'm all, it's the paper chimney so that Santa knows where to come down into your apartment. It just covers half the wall.
I will put that paper chimney right on top of my neighbor's pool table.
Tanya says, if I'm going to be stuck in a snow globe with Scrooge, at least I can make it Christmassy. Ryan is not impressed. He's even less impressed when the junior detective, Tanya, starts laying out ground rules. First thing, we've got to clean up after ourselves. Keep things organized. Ryan smugly says, absolutely, and picks up a tiny Christmas tree she put on the coffee table and sets it back into the Christmas swag suitcase. Tanya picks it back up and puts it back on the table, mentioning, by the way, I moved your stuff from the master suite into the room down the hall. Ryan is floored. I called that room by putting my stuff in there. Tanya ignores him. Final rule, we stay apart. I'll do surveillance on the second floor, and you've got the first. Ryan is puzzled. Why do you get upstairs? Tanya replies, every time you walk, it's like a herd of rhinos forging their way through the tundra. Ryan looks off to the side and mumbles to himself, why does everyone always say that? Tanya may be the junior detective between the two, but she is taking charge. Ryan says, great. That works out well. This way we see less of each other. He starts grabbing for the tiny tree as Tanya heads upstairs and she yells behind her, don't even think about it. Tanya is a force to be reckoned with and I am here for it. Pow, pow, pow. Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
Upstairs, Tanya's snapping pictures with the telephoto lens of Francis Miller's house. She sees all. While Ryan is downstairs, peeking through the blinds and eating snacks. She comes down and sees the mess surrounding him and says, bad news, detective, there's no maid service here. He looks at her, looks at the mess, and ceremoniously kicks the wrappers under the table and leans back in his chair.
You don't know me!
She is annoyed. And that is her perpetual state around him. But starts going over everything she's seen that day, regardless, because they're there to work. She shares that Francis Miller has blueprints on his wall, a lot of packages being delivered and boxes everywhere. Tanya takes out her notebook and starts jotting some things down, and Anderson plucks it out of her hand and reads her latest entries. 8:45, paper delivered. 9:15, Tabby Cat passes by. Why is that even relevant? He asks. She snatches her book back. You don't know what's relevant until it is. He's over the conversation and tells her, Stan's going to be dropping off lunch later. You want a burger? No, she declines. I want a salad, you know, something green, something healthy. He nods as he dials. Great, I'll get you extra pickles. He places the order while Morris sees a delivery being dropped off. The box is left on the front stoop, and she knows Francis isn't home, so she may be able to find out where that package was sent from. She slips out the door, while Anderson shouts at Stanton about the location of cheese on his burger, completely oblivious to her task at hand. She skirts the walkway carefully and slyly leans over to take a picture of the box. While she's outside, Ryan locks the front door behind her and continues shouting about his food. Stanton, why would I want the cheese on the side? There's a reason it's called a cheeseburger! She hurries back up the steps and jiggles the handle to find it locked. Ugh! Seriously? She hisses. Ryan! Ryan! She knocks on the door incessantly, but she's there for a while, stuck on the steps, when an older man in a jogging suit and hand weights notices her. You locked out? He shouts, and she tries to politely wave him away. Can't blow their cover. I can call someone to help if you want. I live just down the street. She declines and knocks more urgently. Finally, Anderson throws open the door just enough to push his face through and chastises her. Could you be any louder? And she whisper yells back, could you not lock me out? They are having a face-off when Stanley says, Stanley's the name of the guy on the street. I might not have mentioned that. The newlyweds. That's you, right? Tanya flips around. The who now?
I love the expression on Tanya and Ryan's face when it's like newlyweds and Tanya flips around and Ryan's there behind her and it's just their faces being like, well, what?
Tanya flips around because I want to say that word again. The who now? And Stanley explains, the real estate lady said some newlyweds were looking at the house. That's you, right? They decide to play along and introduce themselves as Tasha and Rupert, the newlyweds. Well, Stanley, the jogger guy in the street, gushes. You're right next to Francis. He's a great guy, does great decorations, and he's the head of the Christmas committee. He's going to be really eager to meet you. We're always looking for volunteers for our Christmas committee. Christmas committee? Tanya repeats, confused. Yeah, Stanley enthuses. We do caroling decorations and potlucks. We do it all. Oh, the whole neighborhood's going to want to meet you. I'll spread the word. And he speed walks off. Stanley was so stinking cute. his little sweatsuit and his little hand weights.
He was very cute.
Once they're back inside the house, Ryan is pissed. Great. Now we're exposed. Time to pack up everything and go home. Tanya says, no, this could be a good thing. If we continue acting like a married couple and we get onto that Christmas committee, we could have a whole other access to Miller and his house. Ryan isn't happy. Yeah, but saying we're married? Tanya shakes her head. It's harder for me. It's obvious that I could do so much better than you. A silence falls between them and Ryan chuckles. A small smile plays across his face. Good one, he acknowledges. Tanya says, so, what do you think? Ryan responds, Merry Christmas, dear. Next thing we know, we see Tanya and Ryan at the tree lot. Tanya says, now that we're the newlywed couple on the block, it's important to show our Christmas spirit. We need a beautiful tree in our window. Ryan grudgingly goes along. Fine. Hey, look, it's a tree. They are stopped in front of the first tree they see, and Ryan continues, this one's great. We'll take it. He raises his arm to signal towards someone. Tanya pushes his arm down. Hold your horses. It's time for me to throw some obligatory Christmas tree selection tips at you. If you rub a couple of needles, spring, that's on the bingo chart.
The sound effect like we had in the Godwink movie is just going to be inexplicable. Every time there's a bingo card hit.
If you rub a couple of needles between your fingers, you should smell a fresh pine scent. She rubs the needles, sniffs her fingers. Nope, no scent. This one's needles are going to drop. We don't want naked tree limbs in our window. But it's not just about freshness. It's also about the shape, the height, the feel of the tree. Ryan rolls his eyes. Fine. Please, m'lady, lead me to the perfect tree. Why are you so into Christmas, anyways? Tanya says, I think I miss Christmas in Wisconsin. Plus, I've loved it since I was little. The real question is, why don't you like it? Ryan says, I used to enjoy Christmas until the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future paid me a visit, a.k.a. Jackson, Johnson, and Abrams, my wife's divorce attorneys. My ex got the ornaments, I got the golf clubs, and I'm fine with that. Tanya can't believe he was married. Ryan says, what are you talking about? It should surprise you that all of this, he gestures up and down his body, isn't taken. Jason Momoa and I are practically interchangeable. But putting my desirability to the side, we're going to need a cover story if we're going to get away with this. Oh, I can't believe you didn't pick up on that, Tam. I put that in just for you.
What?
I said, Jason Momoa and I are practically interchangeable for...
I did not hear that. You best believe if I heard that, I would have commented, Jason Momoa.
Totally like you put up a picture of Paul Campbell and you put up a picture of Jason Momoa and it's like, which one is which?
No, you don't.
But putting my desirability to the side, we're going to need a cover story if we're going to get away with this. Tanya glances over at him. Oh, I've got that covered. She pulls a plastic baggie out of her pocket with two rings. Here are some rings the chief sent over, and I've emailed you all the details of how we met. I wrote backstories for us and everything. Tanya goes over their cover story. They moved from Tallahassee for a job, and Ryan is a chiropractor because every story needs a grain of truth, and he's a small pain in the neck. He glances at the backstory and says, great, I've skimmed it. I'm good. She raises her eyebrows dubiously. You know you need to pay attention to the details. But Ryan waves her off, saying he skimmed everything. Tanya waves over the Christmas tree guy and says, sir, we'll take this tree. Ryan is relieved. Great. Does that mean we're done? Tanya gets a diabolical Christmas grin on her face. Oh, we're just getting started on to decorations.
Ooh. I have to admit that if I was partnered with Paul Campbell and the chief was like, you guys have to pretend like you're married. On the outside, I'd be like, God damn it. On the inside, I'd be like, hello. Does that mean we have to share beds and stroke each other lovingly on the arm when we're in public? I'm okay with that. I'd be doing a little happy dance in my head like Corinne just did in the camera. Ryan and Tanya bring their tree home and begin decorating it. And I'm going to be honest, it does not look good. It's pretty bare with a few ornaments on it, and that's it. But I'll withhold my judgment that perhaps they'll have other ornaments on the way because there's a delivery.
Ooh.
Detective Morris has taken upon herself to purchase a slew of yard decorations because you only have one chance to make a festive impression. And Corinne, they're on a stakeout. Who do you think approves these purchases? They're just like going willy-nilly with the fucking budget.
I just imagine that those weren't actually purchases from a store, but rather from the police impound area or evidence area or whatever. So it was just like, it was free to them.
We're going to have to confiscate these reindeers. We're going to have to subpoena these lights.
Exactly. It's like when my car got borrowed by a stranger and I got it back, I opened up the trunk and lo and behold, there was an air compressor in there. There were all kinds of tools and I called up the police and I was like, yeah, you guys got to take this away. And they came over and they took the air compressor and stuff out of my car. And just imagine that, but with Christmas decorations.
Holy Francis Miller, Corinne. You could have been like accused of some museum heist if you didn't notice that and were driving around with it.
Well, that's why I had them pick it up because I was like, I know that this is stolen. I was all, there's no fucking way I want to be associated with a fucking air compressor in any kind of way. This is not something that you just throw in the dumpster.
So, Detective Morris makes decoration purchases or borrows decorations, and Ryan is less than pleased, but he gamely begins putting up a line of gold wire and twinkle light reindeer figures on their front yard.
Did you notice before that happens when they're decorating the tree and the delivery truck pulls up and they're pulling supplies out of the back of the truck? There is the reindeer from Christmas Comes Twice that gets delivered to their house. The reindeer
that's right.
Tamara won playing the knocky over fake milk bottle game, and gave the butt end of, as Tamara said in the episode, to George.
Ah, quintessential Hallmark decoration recycling.
Yes.
Interesting. Tanya looks at his work and says, they look like guard dogs. And Ryan agrees. That's because they're guarding the house. He knocks one of the reindeer over, which knocks the other, and they all fall like dominoes. She suggests that he just stick to hanging the lights, and he happily obliges. He takes a string of lights, starts untangling it, and gets a brilliant idea. Their yard is right next to Francis Miller's. He can sneak a peek over into Francis's garage, which is conveniently opened. Tanya tries to stop him, whispering, what are you doing? And Ryan whispers back, getting a better look. Don't worry, he'll never see us. He props his ladder up, grabs a string of lights in hand, and leans way over to get a look inside. Just then, a voice from behind them asks, can I help you? And it's Francis, because of course it is. Ryan and Tanya recover quickly and introduce themselves. He says, oh, yes, yeah, you're the new neighbors that Stanley was telling me about. I was just about to bring over one of my famous homemade fruit cakes.
Blech.
He hands it over and Tanya takes it smiling. I would be like, no, thank you.
Yeah, for real.
That's right, she says cheerily. I'm Tasha, and this is my husband. She gestures over to Ryan, who says, oh, yes, hi, I'm Ryan. Rupert for short. They make introductions all around, and Tosh Anya, I called her Tosh Anya because she was under her pseudonym. Yep. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very clever, but not going to use it again because it'll be very confusing. Tosh Anya mentions, hey, Stanley said you have a Christmas council. We would love to join it. Francis is thrilled and seems overall like a pretty nice guy. He invites him to the council potluck the next night. They swap information and he says, great, I'll see you tomorrow. Rupert says, well, better get back to my lights. And Tanya, still a little salty from all of Ryan's surliness, decides to make him pay a little bit. Hey, honey, why don't you check all of Mr. Miller's lights while you're putting up ours? Francis declines, no, I can't let you do that. But Tanya insists. It'll be our pleasure. It's the neighborly thing to do. Ryan looks peeved, and with a clenched smile, he puts his arm around Tanya and starts shaking her from side to side, saying with forced cheer, "That's right. Happy life, happy wife, am I right?" As they walk away, Ryan whispers, "Why did you nominate me to fix his lights?" And she snaps at him, "Because he gave us a fruitcake. We had to do something in exchange. Don't you know that? Were you raised by wolves?" He counters, "Were you raised by elves?" Johnny's not having any of it, though. "You can thank me now. There's only two words I want to hear out of your mouth." And Ryan looks at her confused. "What, stop talking?" And she says, "No, you should say thank you, because now we're going to see the inside of Francis's house without a search warrant."
Ha ha.
She walks off smugly, and he mutters a half-hearted, "Thank you." The next morning, Ryan is busy playing solitaire and buying a mini pink travel-sized can of pepper spray online. Tanya comes from the kitchen bringing a couple of mugs of her grandmother's special Christmas coffee, which is coffee mixed with hot cocoa and cinnamon, and I'm just saying that specifically because I want to save that for posterity so I can make that in the future because that sounds delicious. She offers him a cup, and you see his steely resolve crack a little. She sits down next to him, sees the screen on his computer, and says, explain? Ryan divulges that the pink pepper spray is for his niece because she's too young for a taser. He takes a sip of the beverage. "This is delicious," he exclaims. And she shares that it was her grandmother and that she used to make it every Christmas special just for them. And they'd sit up in her apartment and drink their Christmas coffees and watch people pass by and make up stories about who they were.
Aww.
Ryan smiles. "So you were always a spy, huh? A detective from a young age?" She smiles back. "Yeah, I always wanted to be a detective. I just hope I'm up for the job." She looks down sadly and he says, "Seriously? No, you're great at what you do." And since they're sharing, and he finally says something nice, she opens up a little bit more. "Actually, that's why I moved here. My father was a detective in Wisconsin, and I was a beat cop on track to be a detective, but everybody in the precinct thought that I was just getting the promotion because of him, not based on my skills, which is why I'm here. So I can prove that I can do it on my own." He nods. "That makes sense, and explains why you're so nitpicky and detail-oriented." He offers her the downstairs window so she can have a great view of her new hometown, but she smiles and declines. "Nope. I'm actually going to go to the agency that hired Francis Miller to try to get some information. And while I'm out, I'll pick up some supplies for the house and for the party tonight. Call me if anything happens." He agrees and they part ways.
Tanya goes to the Carmichael Employment Agency and is greeted by Lois Carmichael herself. They go to her office and Lois sits behind her desk, gesturing for Tanya to have a seat. "How may I help you?" Tanya says, "I wanted to talk with you about one of your Santas, Francis Miller." Lois is surprised. "He's one of our most popular Santas. Everybody loves him and calls him Mr. Christmas." Tanya says, "Glad to hear he's so popular. I'd love to get a list of the places he's worked and is going to be booked in." Lois is concerned. "I'm happy to help you, but is there anything I should know?" Tanya keeps pretty tight-lipped, saying, "He's a person of interest in a case." Lois says, "Well, please let me know what's going on. I don't want to jeopardize our reputation." Tanya agrees, and they part ways. Next, we see Tanya and her sister Amy shopping at a Christmas fair. They have wicker shopping baskets and are filling them with Christmas goodies. Amy says, "Please come to Aspen with us. I don't want you to be alone during Christmas." Tanya tells her not to worry. "I won't be alone. The other stocking in my basket is for my partner." Amy is intrigued. "Really? Do tell." But Tanya just shakes her head. "There's not much to say." Amy says, "Uh-huh. Well, at least tell me what he looks like." Tanya sighs. "Ryan is symmetrical with sharp edges." Amy smiles knowingly. Her sister is playing it just too cool, and she thinks Tanya is catching the feels. Speaking of catching things, Tanya's eyes catch on a colorful Santa sweater. "Ooh, that's just what Ryan needs for Christmas." The Santa sweater waves innocently in the breeze on its hanger, not realizing that it will soon be adorning Ryan's body. Back at their newlywed house, Tanya surprises Ryan with their matching Santa sweaters. Ryan is disgusted. "What are we, poodles? No, I'm not wearing that."
But we all know that Tanya is going to prevail on this one, and I, for one, can't wait to see them in their glorious Santa sweaters.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that police precinct had confiscated Christmas sweaters somewhere, too. She really have to go out on a shopping trip with her sister to get some. Hmm?
Tanya's bummed that she didn't have time to pick up anything to bring to the Christmas party, and Paul Campbell gives her a signature eyebrow look. Oh, I've got this covered. You can't show up to a potluck empty-handed. He walks over to the counter and Tanya says, I don't know. I can't leave the cooking to a guy who thinks that Funyuns are a food group. Ryan says, Funyuns are a food group. And I was like, wonder if Tamara agrees with this one.
I sure do. They're a vegetable. They're a starch and a vegetable. All in one.
And then Ryan pulls out a tray of beautifully decorated gingerbread people. At first, Tanya doesn't believe that he made them. You're a cold pizza guy. There's no way. Ryan is irritated. What is this, an interrogation? I had Talbot pick up some ingredients, and there's not much point in cooking when it's just me. Same, Ryan. Same. Tanya is convinced and impressed. Ryan is rightfully smug. In the entryway at Miller's house, Ryan is squirming. He swears the Santa sweater is made out of yak fur. Tanya tells him to suck it up and they go over the plan while they're alone. Ryan will distract Miller and Tanya will take a look in his studio. Miller approaches them. I'm so glad y'all made it. Tanya hands him the gingerbread and Miller takes a snifferoo. Ooh, it's homemade. Thank you. He looks over at Tanya. You shouldn't have. Ryan smiles bitterly. Oh, she didn't. Then we meet the neighborhood folks. Stanley is wearing a different version of the same Christmas sweater, and he's a walking Christmas encyclopedia. Edith is Stanley's wife. They both have a shop, Denver Art and Antiques.
Of course they do.
Suspicious. Alicia is a local high school teacher. It's rewarding, but she's poor because of it, and also happens to be rather thirsty for Ryan. Suspicious.
How is that suspicious?
She has a motivation to do crimes because of money, and she could maybe have suspicions about Ryan and is trying to distract him with her sexy, teachery ways. Winky winky.
Okay, that's good, because I was like, what is this thirsty bitch's problem throughout the movie?
It was really random, and I was like, this is really odd for a Hallmark movie to be having in it. Yeah. Like, Ryan is supposed to be a newlywed, and she's like, hey there, lover. I see a dark corner. You want to go over and hang out there with me? Oops, my shirt just popped off of me. I mean...
Did I say all that right in front of your wife who's standing right next to you? Whoopsie, I didn't see you there, Tasha.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was really odd. And
I'm glad we circled back because I was confused by her this whole time. And like now your kind of hypothesis makes it less confusing ever so slightly. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
But from a moral standpoint, it's weird having that in a Hallmark movie. Eric and Christopher are the gay couple. Yay! And they're opening a new restaurant by Civic Center. But everything is so pricey. Suspicious. Martha believes everyone is a reindeer. Says that Tanya is a Blitzen, which comes from the German word meaning lightning. And Tanya strikes her as a girl with some sparkle. She calls Ryan a comet. Playful. And energetic. Not suspicious at all.
I was going to say. I'm like, what does she have hiding under all those reindeer descriptions, Corinne? Tell us.
More reindeer descriptions. Nothing. Yeah. Maybe a secret crush on Miller. Who knows?
Maybe a little obsession with furries.
Oh.
Suspicious.
But not in regards to an art heist.
Yeah.
When Stanley finds out that Ryan is a chiropractor, he asks for an adjustment. And Ryan tries to snap and crack him. It's not good. Everybody moves on to the dinner. But from their get-to-know-you chat,
Ryan and Tanya are wondering if other people from the neighborhood could be in on it as well. Suspicious.
Suspicious.
Thanks for joining.
It only took me 4 tries to catch on. Are we suspicious about something? Everybody gathers around the dinner table for the meal, and Tanya asks Francis how he came up with the idea for the Christmas committee. He gets a sentimental look in his eyes and says, "Oh, my wife, Kathy, she loved everything Christmas and believed you could make things better just by putting a Christmas bow on it."
Aww.
Everybody around the table agrees and raises their glasses and says, "Hear, hear, Kathy was the best." "So," Francis asks, "how did you two meet?" Tanya and Ryan give each other a look and each try to pass off the responsibility of their origin story to each other. Tanya loses and says, "At the gym, at a spin class, we reached for the same bike." Ryan adds, "Yes, I was next to her but couldn't even hear the instructor because she was shouting so loud, 'Yeah, come on, do it!'" Everybody laughs. And Tanya, in retribution, says, "But it was really his poetry that won me over, and all the sonnets about rainbows and butterflies." "But honey, you should totally tell one." Ryan says, "No, they don't want to hear it." And the gay couple pipes up, "Yes, we do." But they don't do it. They keep one-upping each other with embarrassing facts. So Ryan finally quickly ends the conversation with, "Then I propose the end," to stop the fictional shit show they're dishing out about each other. No one seems to notice the awkward back and forth, and everybody comments at what a cute couple they are.
Aww.
Tanya agrees and says, "Yeah, we're so in sync. We finish each other's." She waits a few seconds and elbows Ryan, who catches on. "Sentences," he says abruptly. "Suspicious," Tamara says after the 4th time. She asks to be excused to the bathroom, and Francis tells her it's upstairs. She goes, and instead of heading towards the restroom, she goes into his study and looks around. On his computer, there's a picture of a beautiful estate, and she snaps a photo of it. She turns around to do another quick sweep when she hears, "What are you doing in here?" It's Francis. Again. He's peeking in, and she explains, "Huh, oh, I got turned around. Where's the bathroom again?" He leads her out and says, "I'll come with you, so you don't get lost." When she exits, he has a suspicious look on his face and surveys the office before quietly closing the door and following her out. I would be suspicious, too, if somebody was roaming around my house. Same, Francis, same.
Mm-hmm.
She eventually makes it back downstairs, only to find Ryan at the keyboard leading everybody in Christmas carols. He is full of surprises. Eventually, the night concludes, and everybody begins to leave, but not before Ryan proposes, "Hey, everybody, let's come over here and take a group picture." He holds his camera for posterity/evidence and asks everybody to say Frosty. Everybody gets in the spirit and they take a few more photos before people don their jackets and start heading out. Francis pulls Ryan aside and praises him for how talented he was at singing and insists that they both need to join the Christmas Council tomorrow for caroling. And also gives him a little advice. He shares that when he first moved into the neighborhood, he felt like sometimes he didn't belong. And then one day, you open the door, and there's your neighbor.
Aww.
Ryan doesn't know what to make of this. Francis does not seem like a thief. He seems like a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's in the doorway when somebody comments, "Hey, you're under the mistletoe!" Ryan and Tanya look up and realize they're talking to them. "Kiss! Kiss! Kiss!" everyone urges. Ryan says, "No, I just had onion dip in my breath and no, no, no." But the crowd of people are egging them on because there's nothing more romantic than kissing in front of a group of your neighbors.
Yeah, sexy.
At everyone's urging, they finally kiss. And it's a short one, and it's a sweet one, and they linger a little bit too long. And when they part, there's an uncomfortable moment, but the crowd is appeased and starts leaving.
I love the way they looked at each other after the kiss. Like, they both had their own unique look, but it was like, "Oh, hey there. Hey."
So maybe being fake married to you won't be that bad.
Right? And also, did you notice the, quote, mistletoe that was happening there?
I did not.
It was like they found a bush in the neighborhood, and they're like, "This is green and leafy," and they, like, grabbed it, and they fucked it up onto the archway, and then, when they're like, look, it's mistletoe, the camera goes boop, boop, like does a quick pan up and down where like a few branches were there. And then they were just like, oh yeah, that's mistletoe. Winky, winky.
And also a bring, because I do believe that is a square on our bingo board. Is it mistletoe or isn't it?
Yes.
In this case, it is not. It is, but not. Everybody says it is.
This was just like leafy bush.
That's my coochie cooler Wonder Twin powers.
Oh, name. No.
Form of a leafy bush. And not the one in your yard.
Please leave outside, me alone.
On their... Outside on their way to their rental home, Tanya instructs him, do not read anything into that kiss. And he assures her that he won't. Since they're back to business, she shares what she found in the office. Cutting tools, blueprints, and a picture of an estate that's not too far away. Ryan commends her on her investigation skills, and she says, thanks. And we're both full of surprises. How did I not know that you play the piano? He shrugs. Took lessons since I was six. And their eyes soften a little more at each other. Something is brewing. Something is steaming. Something is hot between them, and it is not the cocoa.
Once they've returned home from the party, they start breaking down the information. They have set up a corkboard with pics of the people from the neighborhood, red string, and the board is framed in twinkle lights. They have the entire neighborhood Christmas committee up on the board and are viewing them all as suspects. Chief Talbot is running background checks on everyone. Tanya walks over to the window and takes a peek outside. Ryan says, anything good? Tanya says, no, but this neighborhood sure does take me back to Christmases in Wisconsin. The lights, caroling, the feel of warm community. I miss that. Ryan gets a smile on his face, seeing her reminisce happily. Tanya asks, did your family do anything for the holidays? Ryan shares that his family always would get in a big snowball fight on Christmas Eve. His nickname was Frosty, because his aim was stone cold. They smile warmly at each other, and Ryan takes the moment to open up. I was actually planning on working over Christmas. Most of my friends are married, and sometimes I visit my brother and his family in Albuquerque, but that just reminds me of what I'm missing. Tanya says, you're the hardest working detective in the precinct. And Ryan gets melancholy. It's what cost me my marriage. Have you ever been married? Tanya says, almost. I was engaged to a guy at the academy, but he got a job offer in a small town. I really wanted to be a detective, and I knew I couldn't do that there, so we ended up parting ways. Ryan nods. Well, you certainly have the talent for it. Tanya glances out the window again. Wait a second. Miller is leaving in a truck with another guy. Ryan and Tanya know that their moment has come. They hop into the car and tail them to the Christmas market. As Ryan and Tanya are tailing them on foot, Ryan says, hold on a second. I recognize that guy. That's Findlay. An old partner of mine busted him for breaking and entering. Things are getting more, suspicious by the moment. Miller and his company turn, and Ryan and Tanya duck into an alcove to avoid being made. Unfortunately, they lose them. But on the plus side, they do find a very cute stuffed knit rainbow reindeer marionette for Ryan's niece. Not quite as good as a pink pocket can of mace, but close.
I want the mace. It's cute and small and pink.
Pocket-sized, perfect for a 10-year-old. It's later in the evening, and Ryan and Tanya are back at their newlywed house. While Ryan has his eye on Miller's house waiting for him to come back, Tanya is doing research on her computer. And just as Ryan sees Miller pull up, triumph number one! Tanya finds the estate she saw a picture of, 1215 Crestmore, the Van Houten estate. Triumph number two! She recognized a unique stylistic detail of a local architect, and Tanya showed that architect the picture. She recognized the house instantly and told Tanya where it was. Ryan is thrilled. This
calls for a celebration. I may have whipped up a little something-something, and he goes to the wine fridge, does a little wiggle dance in front of it, and pulls out two cups of his dad's hard eggnog. They clink glasses, and Tanya takes a drink. Whoa, that's got a kick to it. But on the plus side, I no longer need to worry about trimming my nose hairs. They've had a little something to drink, thrown on some Christmas music, and are finishing decorating the tree, as Tamara mentioned earlier, was only partially decorated before. In the midst, they get into a tinsel fight, and while they're throwing clumps of tinsel gleefully at each other, they are interrupted by a snowy, grumpy Talbot. He's been trying to get a hold of them to get inside, but due to the music, they didn't hear the phone. He had to sneak through the backyard, and he is not happy about it. He pulls out a scroll. Hear ye, hear ye. The captain wants to know how the case is going. News about town is there has to been another break-in at a gallery on Santa Fe about an hour ago. Finally, if thou dost make any more mistakeths, thou art off the case. Ryan and Tanya are sheepish. They haven't made much progress, but they assure Talbot that they are the ones to get the job done. Talbot tries angling for some hot cocoa, but they're not having it and usher him gently and swiftly out the front door.
I also don't think detectives should be drinking on the job. Just saying. I am nitpicking their stakeout skills.
Look, they're getting into the whole method of being a married couple. So they're, you know.
Okay. Yes, and drinking does usually come along with those marriages.
Exactly.
Relationships just do drive people to drink.
Has your alcohol content gone down since you've broken up with your...
Yes, it has. And I've also lost a bunch of weight because I don't have somebody feeding me enough food for six people.
Weird.
Props to my ex. He just cooked a shit ton of food inexplicably for the two of us.
Oh, and it was delicious food. Delicious.
Eat. I don't
want it. Here comes the airplane into the hangar.
No airplane. Get away. Later that night, the Christmas Council is out singing their Christmas carols with Tanya and Ryan in the back. Ryan is doing a lackluster performance of the 12 Days of Christmas, and Tanya calls him out on it. He counters, "Well, where's your voice?" And she retorts, "I'm blending in with everybody else." They move on to the next house, and both detectives muse about Francis Miller's itinerary. His festive nature and extracurricular activities are throwing them off. When is he going to stake out his next crime? After another round of caroling, she accuses him of not having any holiday spirit. And he says, "You want to see some holiday spirit? Do you want to see some holiday spirit?" He makes his way to the front of the group and sings a boisterous, "We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas." He extends his arms dramatically and his police badge drops onto the floor. He and Tanya both see it and they look at each other panicked. And then we'll find out what happens after the break.
No!
When we last left off, Ryan had dropped his police badge on the floor amidst all the neighbors right in the middle of their stakeout. Tanya sees it after they look at each other panicked, and to cover it up, she steps in front of Ryan and sings an even boisterous glad tidings. That's not how the song goes.
I'm like, that's an interesting rendition.
We wish you Merry Christmas. Glad tidings to you and your kin. Ryan pockets away the badge. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Amazing. Knocked it out of the park.
I sang that. Her voice is a beautiful distraction, unlike mine, and it works. Francis comes over and gives her a heartfelt compliment, and nobody sees the badge, except for the two neighbors, Alicia and Eric. As the group moves on, Eric mentions, "Hey, I could have sworn I saw a police badge falling out of your pocket." Tanya and Ryan are dumbstruck, but Tanya, as usual, saves the day and quickly says, "Oh, honey, have you not worn that jacket since Halloween?" She slaps him playfully on the shoulder. You make such a cute old-timey sheriff. Eric is placated, and Alicia is turned on? She looks at Ryan and says huskily, I bet you do make a cute sheriff, and walks away. Tanya's perturbed but says nothing, because how dare that girl flirt with your pretend husband right in front of you? Fuck that bitch.
For real. To his credit, Ryan isn't like, hey there, hey.
There's one scene where he makes like he's going to go after her, and she like grabs his shoulder like, uh-uh. But then that's only like one short scene. The other time when Alicia's like trying to stick her claws into him, he's like, I'm going to go stand over here away from you. Mm-hmm. The gang reconvenes at a hot chocolate bar. They've got different kinds of cocoa and all the fixings you can want. Where is that place? Sign me up. Let's go now.
Oh, for real. They have fucking flights of hot chocolate. I was like, I want a fucking flight of hot chocolate.
Uh-huh. You want to stir it with the peppermint stick? You want some caramel? You want some whipped cream? You want some marshmallows? We got it all. Damn. If that place actually does exist, please reach out to us and let us know, because we would like to frequent it. Thanks.
I do have my own hot chocolate bar at my apartment, though. True story.
And you did not share all the fixings with the hot chocolate? I did not realize there were fixings. I saw your hot chocolate. But do you have caramel?
I have
peppermint sticks.
I have chocolate sauce, and I have chocolate mint sauce, and I have whipped cream, and I have minties that you can put in there, like chocolate covered minties that you could also swirl.
But do you have caramel?
No caramel. Sorry.
Tanya and Ryan are fitting right in. They're mingling, and the Christmas Council has fully embraced them. Both detectives are getting wrapped up in the spirit of the group and are really starting to enjoy themselves in spite of the task at hand. Ryan winds up sitting next to Eric, who observes, hey, this must be a far cry from Tallahassee. I actually went to college there. Where was your favorite local place? Oh, Ryan says dismissively, there were so many. Like what? Eric persists, maybe I know it. Ryan flounders for an answer, and luckily Tanya's close by and hears this and swoops in to yet again save the day. She joins them and says casually, oh, you know, the clay gardens are lovely, and Adam Street's always fun, but I think my favorite place was that vintage car museum. Eric is excitedly nodding. He knows almost all of those places, and then gets called away. Ryan thanks his sweet lucky stars and breathes a sigh of relief that Tanya was so prepared. Francis comes over with a sample flight of cocoa. Ha! Oh, for them. A gift for the new members, he says. Enjoy! The detectives don't want to be rude, so they take their mugs and sit off to sample the piping hot mugs of deliciousness.
Yes!
Ryan sips on one and comments, oh, this one's a little bitter, but it has a sweet side. Ha! Kind of like you, Tanya jokes. They chuckle, but she grows serious as she looks at Francis hanging out with all his neighborhood holiday homies. It's hard to imagine a nice guy like that as a thief. Ryan nods in agreement. The liquid chocolate loosens their inhibitions, and Tanya remarks, well, it looks like somebody's finding his holiday spirit. Ryan argues, I got spirit. Just last year I bought the whole canine unit reindeer antlers.
Aww.
I know, that sounds adorable. No, really, she pushes. Didn't you have any special holiday traditions growing up? Yeah, I did, he says hesitantly. I was raised by a single mother, and every year we would get these paper bags, put candles in them, and line them on the sidewalks. It was beautiful, and we only burned down a couple of houses before they made us stop. Hashtag fire safety. Okay, he doesn't say that last bit. But she looks touched and asks, why do you keep your best traits hidden? He looks at her openly and says, habit, I guess, or maybe I haven't found anyone to share them with. She smiles because, is he flirting? And says softly, this is nice. And they clink their cocoa mugs together.
Winky, winky. At the end of the evening. How do you know someone's flirting with you when they go, a winky, winky?
When they confess their love without saying it outright. I need somebody to spend the rest of my life with to open me up in ways that I haven't been opened up in a really long time.
Winky, winky.
Who could that be?
Winky, winky.
Winky, winky. Oh, see, I didn't know where you're going with that until the winky winky. Now I'm on board.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Maybe I've been flirting with people and I just never knew because they didn't know about the winky winky rule. At the end of the evening, everyone is going their separate ways, and Stanley and his wife ask Rupert and Tasha to hang out for a minute as they stand outside their rented home. They have something to give them. They walk away, and when they're gone, Francis turns towards them and points accusingly with a stern look on his face and says, "I'm on to you, too." Ryan and Tanya are frozen for a couple of beats before he breaks into a huge grin and says, "You two are professional singers, aren't you? Those voices, my goodness." They both laugh nervously when Stanley and Edith return and hand the two a framed photo from the potluck.
Aww.
Tanya accepts it, and they both look genuinely touched. She says, "Oh, you shouldn't have." "Yes, we should," Edith argues. "We want you to feel welcome."
Aww.
And they do. They feel welcome and guilty as hell, all rolled up into one messy holiday package.
Back at the newlywed house, Tanya is doing more research on her laptop when Ryan comes out humming with a plate of butter cookies. They both savor the super tasty cookies. "Wow," says Tanya, "what's your secret?" Ryan nonchalantly mentions, "If you use Molly McButter, it comes out great every time."
Maybe. Molly McButter?
Yes.
Molly McButter?
Yes.
Doesn't he say brown butter?
I was going to say, or maybe he says, "If you brown your butter."
Are we being sponsored by Molly McButter? The best way to get your Christmas tree set special something. Winky winky.
I'll let you decide which thing he actually said.
Okay. It's for sure Molly McButter.
Ryan gestures over to Tanya's laptop. "What are you up to over there?" Tanya gets a smug, gleeful look on her face. "Oh, just finding a breakthrough in our case." Ryan is surprised. "What? Dish, dish." She flips her laptop around to show a picture of a multi-million dollar ornament. The Van Houtens are having a Christmas party and got this ornament on loan from the Denver Art Museum as the centerpiece for their event. Both detectives agree that it looks like a promising next target. Tanya also lets Ryan know that the neighbors all came up with clean records. Suddenly, the motion detector goes off next door, and Tanya and Ryan go outside to snoop. They catch pieces of the conversation from the other side of the fence. Findlay says, "I don't know. I don't think we can pull it off." Miller says, "We can totally do it. And if we stick to the plan, Christmas will surely come early this year." Suddenly, Ryan slips and falls with a thud on the other side of the fence, alerting Miller to his neighbor's presence. Miller comes over and Findlay heads off. Miller says, "Hey, what happened over here?" Ryan inelegantly plays it off. "I slipped, I see, yeah," Miller responds. "Well, careful, don't you worry, I'll be keeping my eye on you two." "Okay, well, you two take care, I'll see you for charades in half an hour." Next thing we know, we're at Miller's house watching the most rousing game of charades with the neighbors I've ever seen. And while I know it's scripted, I felt like they really had a lot of fun acting out their charade parts. Tanya and Ryan win at charades, but really, everybody wins because Miller hands out bags of peppermint bark to everyone. After the main charade event, everyone is milling around talking, and Miller approaches Ryan. "How are you doing?" Ryan looks at him and sincerely says, "Thank you for how welcome you've made us feel this week." Miller smiles. "I'm so glad you could join us." They hear Tanya laughing across the room and glance over at her. She sees Ryan, smiles, and waves. Ryan raises his eyebrows in acknowledgement. Miller says, "You know, there's such a fun chemistry between you two." Ryan chuckles. "Yeah, like TNT in a match." Miller gets a little reflective. "My Kathy taught me that the secret to a happy marriage is cutting each other a lot of slack. You know, it's important to just
enjoy all these beautiful moments of the holiday season. It's these good memories that can help get you through the hard times. The people we love are like snowflakes. They're beautiful and perfect, and no two are alike. Miller walks off, and Ryan is visibly touched by what Miller has just said to him.
On the walk back to their newlywed house, next door, Ryan says to Tanya, I don't know if Miller is the kindest, most intuitive guy ever, or if he's just fucking with us.
Tanya sighs. You finally convinced me that he's masterminding a crime ring, and now you're having doubts? They sit on the steps outside of their house, and Ryan says, After my marriage ended, I had a really hard time trusting my judgment, and sometimes I think I jumped to conclusions too quickly about a couple of people. Tanya is picking up what he's putting down because he added an extra winky winky at the end of that. She says, Yeah, being fake married to you has had its ups and downs. He chuckles. Okay. She looks over at him and smiles. But I have no regrets. They hear a ding ding. And Tanya pulls her phone out of her pocket. She reads her text silently and then says to Ryan, Well, it looks like we're going to find out about Miller. The captain approved us going to the undercover party. It starts to snow. Fake digital snow, which the kind that Hallmark uses is the worst kind. They look at each other softly. Yes. And enjoy the moments. I never thought I would like be nostalgic for the big flakes of foam falling from the sky until I saw the horrible, worst fake digital snow ever. And I was like, okay, take backs. Give me the foam.
Sister Amy calls for an update and to say that she misses Tanya. Aww. They hash out the deets of their holidays, and Tanya divulges that her and Anderson have been getting along pretty well and are having a lot of fun, and he's surprisingly festive.
Aww.
They say goodbye and go off on their respective holiday celebrations. Tanya sits in front of her vanity mirror about to get ready when Anderson comes in with a box. Captain dropped off her holiday outfits. He gives the quintessential eyebrow raise as he brings over the box. He opens it, and we can't see what's inside, but we see Detective Morrison's expressions as she looks at the content and says, Seriously? ! Translation, what the fuck? The next scene is straight out of a messed up holiday music video. Tanya, Ryan, and Talbot march into the venue with a remix of Jingle Bells, Jingle All the Way, pumping behind them. They are fully regaled in their elf costumes, the full effect complete with velvet maroon and green suits, striped Ooh. Tights, and elfin hats, all except for Talbot, who is a nutcracker soldier. They look fine. They look fierce. They look festive. Tanya flips her hair in a devil-may-care toss. Ooh. Ryan whips his hat tip around to flank his impish face, just as Talbot trips and falls face first into Aww. The ground. He quickly pops up, but their cool facade has been pierced by the rookie undercover cop. But their costumes are so flawless that they'll blend right in with the staff. Miss Van Hook comes to the front of the crowd and announces that they are about to display the Romanov Christmas ornament. It gets wheeled in, and the detectives are on high alert when Van Houten comes over and commends them for being there and gently suggests that they break the ice to help get this party started. Let's get it started. Ryan agrees and takes Tanya by the hand and leads her onto the empty dance floor where they cut a rug. And he finally divulges, in more ways than one, that he really enjoys spending time with her. Ryan says, I was wondering if after this we could... But she doesn't let him finish because she already knows what he's asking. Yeah, she says as they gaze into each other's eyes. They make a few more sways and then he leans down super close to her lips and she stops him. Where's Miller? She exclaims.
Kisses interrupt us.
The designated Santa seat that he was... in moments ago is empty, and they break apart to try to get eyes on Francis Miller. Ryan gets on his walkie-talkie and tries to get Talbot to track down Miller, but we all know that man will be useless. Just then, the lights blink out, and the party is bathed in darkness for a few moments before a voice shrieks, "There's been a robbery!" Next, we're outside, and Miss Van Houten is telling the two detectives everything she knows. Ryan and Tanya have shed their elves costumes for detective trench coats and are interrogating her along with Talbot around what she saw. She shares that the ornament was still there and untouched, but when she went back into her office, she realized that her two Van Gogh paintings were missing. The detectives contemplate the time frame and whether or not Miller had enough time to steal the paintings once they lost sight of him. They agree he didn't and surmise that he must have had help. Talbot, all of the sudden authoritative, even though he's been a bumbling cop pretty much up until this point, tells him that the captain wants both of them to search Miller's house. They argue that their cover will be blown, but he is adamant. He has the search warrant, and he wants them over there now. Ryan and Tanya share a look. This is not something they're looking forward to. They go to Miller's house and find him coming up the walk out of costume. They ask him where he's been, and he divulges a little breathlessly that he had some things that he needs to take care of. Brian and Tanya tell him that they're cops and they have a search warrant for his property. He's confused and doesn't understand what's going on, but they clear it up when they open his truck and find one of the Van Gogh paintings laying in the back.
Ooh.
He protests, "I didn't put that there, that's not mine." Just as a slew of cop cars drive up the street, the neighborhood is bathed in red and blue lights and the chief walks up. Tanya's appalled and says, "I thought this was going to be quiet." But the chief could care less. "I needed this to get done immediately. And by the way, you two have done enough. You're both off the case." As they walk away, they see Stanley and Edith across the street, tentatively waving at them.
Oh,
I didn't understand why the chief took them off the case like they did something bad because something else got stolen. I didn't understand that. Like, why is he pissed? Because he seemed pissed.
I think that he just felt like they weren't executing things as quickly as he wanted. And so he's just like, "You guys aren't getting the job done. I'm putting somebody else on it."
Maybe it was all those shopping trips and eggnog breaks that they took. Just saying.
Tamara's finally bringing her point home. And it's true. It's true. That whole scene made me so sad when I was watching it. I was like, no, no.
I know.
Tanya and Ryan are back at the precinct feeling like the situation just isn't right. Ryan, though, pulls out the ultimate romantic gesture and makes her a Santa coffee. How cute. To cheer Tanya up. But Tanya isn't really in the mood. Oh, but she was thankful for the Santa coffee. She appreciated it.
She threw it in his face.
I know. I made it seem like she's like, ugh. Santa coffee? Really?
Not right now, Ryan. Not now.
I'll only accept it if you say winky winky afterwards, okay? Tanya says, "Have we found anything else on Miller beyond that first painting?" Ryan shakes his head. "Nope. The second painting is still in the wind and the blueprints aren't at his house anymore." The chief comes out. "Well, Miller is refusing a lawyer, says he's innocent, and he refuses to talk to anyone but y'all." And gentle listeners, if there's one thing Tamara and I have learned from all the true crime and wrongful conviction podcasts that we've listened to, we may not be lawyers in real life, but we've played them on TV. If you're arrested and you're innocent, should you say, "No, I don't want a lawyer"?
No, no, you should always want a lawyer.
What if you're really, really innocent and you just want to be helpful?
I won't go within 25 feet of a police station without a lawyer. Here to play my parking ticket, and I brought my lawyer. And it's paralegal.
I'm here to bail Corinne out, and I brought my lawyer. For me, not for her.
Just in case. If you've listened at all to our podcast, you probably know that I'm in cahoots, so I'm just protecting myself.
So in short, it doesn't matter if you're super duper duper innocent. Repeat after me. Lawyer the fuck up.
Indeed.
That's some ODK legal advice that we have absolutely No real right to give, and yet it is very sound.
Going to a police precinct? Bring a lawyer. Paying your parking ticket? Bring a lawyer. Watching Judge Judy on the TV? Might want to bring a lawyer, just in case, you never know.
She's kind of vindictive, so yeah, I think that's a good idea. In the interrogation room, Tanya and Ryan pull out the board of guilt that their brain hamsters jointly created. In the center of the board is a large picture of Miller dressed as Santa, and then the board is webbed with red string. Pictures of climbing equipment, locksmith and glass cutting tools, his previous conviction, Findlay, another known associate who has broken the law, blueprints and maps of the different places that were broken into the same day that he was playing Santa nearby. Tanya and Ryan point. See? See? They say, pointing at the board. Miller says, well, if wearing a fluffy red suit and creating joy is a crime, lock me up. Then they soften and say to him, look, we have our doubts, but we need to know what's going on so we can help you. Turns out when Miller met Kathy, his late as indicted wife, he turned his life around.
That's not funny.
But it is.
I just laughed because of the way you said indicted. Not cigarettes.
Not cigarettes.
Not on a trip.
Yeah, no. Not just tardy all the time like me. No. Dieted. Kathy believed in grace and the power of forgiveness, and he's taken that into his life as well, giving ex-cons second chances. For example, he hired Findlay, who is an excellent carpenter, to help him renovate a house for a family that can't afford it. Miller says, we wanted to get it done by Christmas, but now with all this, that's just not going to happen. I was trying to be low-key about it all because Kathy felt like those kinds of gifts were better given anonymously. Suddenly, all the red string that was webbing the picture of Miller dressed as Santa falls from the board, and Tanya and Ryan give each other, we feel like the shittiest people looks, and we cut to the next scene.
I would too.
Back at the newlywed house, Tanya is packing up the Christmas decorations when Ryan comes through the front door. Hey, I got your message. Why'd you leave the station so fast? Tanya sighs. I needed to clear my mind. Look at things from a fresh perspective. I looked into Miller's story and it all checks out. Ryan says, that doesn't prove he's innocent, but I agree with you. It doesn't feel like Miller is the one we should be arresting. Well, Tanya says, when you run out of leads, you run your old leads again. While officially they are off the case, they know in their hearts that they are the ones who will set this shit straight.
Cute buddy cop movie.
That's more like sexy, though.
Well, I mean, they are going to hook up, right? So it's kind of like...
Oh, I see. Foreshadowing. Nice.
Winky, winky. Corinne, winky, winky. Lucy, bow, chicka, bow now. Winky, winky.
When they go back to Mrs. Van Houten's, they find out that her friend Lois Carmichael recommended Miller for the Santa. Tanya's brain hamster has quickly constructed a new board. A few suspects are thrown up there. Red string is being strung, and Tanya turns to Ryan. I think I may know what happened. We need to look at the video footage again. After watching the video footage, Ryan and Tanya return to the Carmichael agency and wait for Lois in her office. When she enters, she's effusive. I heard you got your thief. Way to crack the case. Sorry I can't stay to talk long. I'm about to head out on a holiday trip to Bali. Ryan smiles. Oh, that sounds wonderful. Doesn't that sound wonderful, Tanya? Tanya responds. It sure does. But I'm sure you have enough time to answer this question and help us tie up a loose end. Lois smiles brightly. Sure. What can I help you with? Tanya says, I asked you for a list of events that Miller was working, but you left off Mrs. Van Houten's party. Lois said, I'm so sorry. It must have gotten lost in the shuffle. You know how hectic things get near the holidays. Ryan says, oh yeah. And since Mrs. Van Houten is a friend, she probably didn't even seem like a client. All the events you've co-chaired, the visits to her house. Well, you probably know that place like the back of your hand, her art collection, maybe even her security system. Tanya picks up the train of thought. Yeah, with all of that info, it must have been really tempting. to pull one last job before you head off to Bali, a country with no extradition treaty with the U.S. Choo-choo! This train is picking up speed, and Ryan continues. I'm guessing that you blended in with the staff, and if anything pointed towards you, you had Miller right there as an easy fall guy. Well, that is, if you needed one. Lois is indignant. You're being ridiculous. I was in Chicago during the thefts. Tanya says, your alibi? Ryan and Tanya look at each other and start laughing. Yeah, you never used your return ticket. I'm guessing that you took the train back or a rental car. Lois raises her eyebrows. All of this is circumstantial. You don't have anything on me. Ryan says, ugh, yeah. The cameras at the house didn't catch anything, except for one of the caterer's vans had a dash cam. Oh, things aren't looking so good. Tanya agrees. Yeah, and it's too bad for you because it had a great view of you putting the painting into Miller's car and then loading the other painting into your car. She pulls out a picture of Lois dressed up like an elf, loading a painting in the back of Miller's car. Ryan says, which means Lois Carmichael. He turns to Tanya. You know what? You should take it. Tanya says, no, you. They both turn to her and say, you're under arrest. Ryan and Tanya have finally gotten to the point where they're finishing each other's sandwiches.
Sandwiches?
It's a frozen joke.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's Anna thinks she's fallen in love with a guy and she's singing this kind of duet with him. And one of the lines is, we finish each other's, and then he chimes in, sandwiches, instead of instead of sentences.
Got it.
Uh-huh. No, you're not a Frozen fan, apparently. Well, fine then.
Corinne, let it go.
Oh!
Let it go.
Zing!
That was beautiful.
The captain is proud. Carmichael Carmichael confessed to everything. Her business was underwater and she needed the money. Miller and Findlay have been cleared and released. So all's well that ends well. Tanya stops the chief. Well, not quite. Miller's reputation has been damaged from everything that we've done to him. There's a way we can make it up to him. The captain says, yeah, well, I wish things had gone differently. Ryan says, well, there's actually something we could do. It's Christmas Eve and the precinct has pulled together to finish the renovations that Miller and Findlay were working on. Miller is super gracious to Tanya and Ryan, who are apologizing to him. Miller smiles. Don't worry about it. You two were just doing your job, but I gotta say, I'm tired. And after all this, I just want to go home. Merry Christmas. And Miller heads off to get more work done before heading home. They wish him a Merry Christmas as well. When Miller finally does get home, it's dark and he walks up the steps of his house. He notices the paper bag lanterns lining the side of the steps. As he approaches his porch, the Christmas committee, along with Ryan and Tanya, rush out and sing, burning down the house, because of the paper bag lanterns. Just kidding. That was for you, Tam.
Thank you.
They all rush out and say, surprise! They've set up a Christmas dinner for Miller and the neighborhood. Miller gets a big smile on his face. What is all this? Tanya smiles. It's the Christmas committee. We scheduled an emergency meeting so that we could thank you. Miller pshaws. Thank you for what? Ryan says, for everything you've done for us and the neighborhood. Tanya continues, I'd like to propose a toast to our very own Mr. Christmas for bringing us all together and showing us what Christmas can be. After all the congratulations, Tanya and Ryan walk over to the newlywed house. Ryan says, all's well that ends well, but Tanya doesn't know how well things are ending because she sees a sign in the front of their yard. Somebody's rented our house, she says, saddened. I guess that really means all of this is over. Ryan agrees. Then he says, hey, I have a question for you. If I were to invite you over sometime to make gingerbread, would you say yes? Tanya gets a big smile on her face. Absolutely. Ryan smiles back. Great. He gestures towards the house. Would you like to make some gingerbread with me tonight? M'lady. Tanya looks over at the house. Did you rent this place? Ryan says, well, I like our neighborhood, and I think I'd like to stick around for a while. Tanya is feeling those warm fuzzies. That is the greatest Christmas present I've gotten in years. Ryan's smile grows bigger. Finally, we agree on something, and Tanya looks back at him with heart eyes. I'm glad to hear it, because you might have found a partner for keeps. They look at each other with heart eyes and kiss. Sadly, no one was clapping for them per Tamara's requirements, but we'll forgive them this time. The end.
What exactly does making gingerbread mean? Huh? Winky, winky.
Oh.
I also felt bad for Francis, because when he was like, I'm tired, I'm just going to go home. And then he came home to that huge surprise party. I was like, if that was me, and I just got out of jail, and then went to renovate somebody's house, and said I was tired, and came home to a bunch of people, I said I was tired. What part of I'm tired, don't you understand?
Part of the reason why he was tired was because he was demoralized. This remoralized him. And
okay. He was demoralized and I am just a bah humbug. Okay.
No. I would be the exact same as you, except probably more. You know how cranky I get. I'd be like, okay, you have a good time, guys. Thank you. I'm going to go take a nap.
Yeah. Y'all enjoy yourselves in my house. I'll be upstairs. Don't come up there.
Yep.
For the love of God. Do not come up there.
Just clean up after yourselves. It's fine.
Okay. My festive napping buddy, what do you give this movie?
Four dry kisses. I loved Tamara and Paul together. I thought they were great. It was nice having a slightly fresher kind of storyline where it sort of revolves around this whole crime thing versus it revolves around them trying to escalate their love. The one problem I had with the plot, which I halfway had a problem with, is that Paul/Ryan is the senior detective. And I swear to you, he's got to be the dumbest detective on the planet because he's not making any of these discoveries on his own. It's Tamara/Tanya who is like figuring everything out. Not only is she figuring everything out, she is leading everything too. Now, I give it half a break because frequently in the past, this would have been the way it was happening with a guy doing all that stuff and the lady being like, oh, yes. So it was kind of like the roles were reversed. So that was kind of cool. But I wish they had given Ryan a little bit more of a, hey, here's how we're going to do things, collaborative kind of thing versus Tanya leading everything and coming up with everything. And if you're like, it wasn't like that when you told the story, that's because I actually mixed it up a little and I made it seem like he had a little more going on for him.
I put a Corinne spin on it.
Yes. Although he did do all the baking and I appreciate some good cooking. So
hashtag role reversal.
Yeah. The cast was pretty diverse. It had good female leads. And I actually think this may even pass the Bechdel test. Because they spent a lot of time talking about the case instead of just talking about like, oh, I love him, or do you love him? You know?
Yeah.
The script was pretty good in this. There were some very nice, laughable moments in it for me. So yeah, four dry kisses. What about you? What do you give this?
I'm also going to give it four dry kisses. I enjoyed this movie a lot. I liked, again, Tamara and Paul Campbell. I agree with you. They have great chemistry. They really played off each other really well. Mm-hmm. There were some laugh out loud moments that I really enjoyed. And surprisingly, because I didn't know what this was about going in, like I kind of up until the end, I suspected that Francis Miller was not their guy. Mm-hmm. And I was just waiting for the shoe to drop. But the whole time I was like, well, then who is it? Like it took me by surprise who it actually was. Mm-hmm. So it was unpredictable, which I appreciated. The stakes seemed a little bit higher than a lot of the other Hallmark movies, which I enjoy. I like higher stakes. Mm-hmm. I do. I think that's about it. Yeah. High stakes. Unpredictable. Didn't know it was going to happen. Love the cast. Four dry kisses.
Woo! What movie are we watching next week?
The Boyfriends of Christmas Past. And if you want to talk about rambunctious charade scene, that one also has one. Probably should have put that on our Hallmark card.
And this was a pick specifically that Tamara made, so blame her. I'm not bitter. No, I'm fine with it. No, I'm just kidding.
okay, miss, you just went through three movies with three of the same actors that fucked me up so bad because I kept getting the movies intertangled with each other when I was trying to do my notes. What happened to the carousel? Oh, wait, that's the other movie. Oh, wait, no, that was in the other movie. Oh, shit. Wait, there was two carousels. What is happening? Brain hamster just kills over and dies. Fuck this shit.
I think your brain hamster needs to join a union. If you have any thoughts about the Santa Stakeout, our upcoming movies or previous movies, please share with us. You can write us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can get in contact with us via the social medias on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Don't forget to check out our Hallmark Bingo card as well as Twitter. I frequently do live tweets of the new movies that are coming out if you want a little bit of an interactive experience. However, probably not this weekend because I am going to be frolicking with my bestie. You may not know her, but her name is Tamara, and she might co-host this this podcast. Just guessing.
If you pay attention to anything other than me, because I am so illustrious and scene stealing. If you can take your eyes and ears off of Corinne, there's another person in the room. Her name's Tamara. You may have heard her.
Oh my gosh, no. It's me. It's me. Pay attention.
Look what I can do. And that is One Dry Kiss on all the things, spelled O-N-E. And also, it's been a while since we've gotten a review, so we would love to hear some more reviews from you guys. If you enjoy what we're doing and can rate and review us, we'd love to hear it. Please, 5 stars or, you know, positive things, not like that 1-star hate review that Corinne got for whatever reason after she posted something on Twitter.
The armpit smelling incident.
No revenge reviews.
Well, you know, if you don't like the podcast, why are you listening? That's what I just move on. Listen to something you enjoy.
And as always, we thank you all for listening, and we hope we see you next time. And we bid you adieu with
one dry kiss.
Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Joe Pantaleone. Am I fucking saying his name right or wrong? I don't know. I'm going to be kicking myself. Joe Pantaleano. Fuck. I knew I was saying it wrong.
I can tell I used the recording part of this. Rab Dan. I thought that was a clever rap name, but it's not. It was Ryan. Okay.